What's up, family? You are tuned into Law and Disorder, a podcast where we expose the cracks in our system, agitate for resistance, and collectively build a new world in which all of us can thrive. From KPFA Radio and the Pacifica Network, I'm your host, Kat Brooks.
This is Law and Disorder. I'm Brian Edwards-Tiegert, sitting in for Kat Brooks, who's off for the rest of the week. We're going to turn now to tomorrow, what's being billed as Good Trouble Lives On. It's the fifth anniversary of the death of Congressman and civil rights icon John Lewis. He was a veteran of the Nashville sit-ins, the Freedom Rides, and the Bloody Sunday police riot against marchers crossing the Edmund Pettus Bridge to demand voting rights. Organizers are planning actions in communities around the country under the umbrella of one of his slogans, Good Trouble. We're joined now by one of the organizers, Amos White, is in the island city of Alameda. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good to have you with us. Tell us what you have planned for tomorrow.
Wow. Alameda has a two-part rally and documentary screening of the film that presents the late civil rights leader, icon, and Congressman John Lewis, called John Lewis, Good Trouble, being screened at Alameda Theater between 5 and 7:45 tomorrow. But prior to that, at City Hall, there is a mass rally and mobilization and visualization, people with signage. We have reports we'll have 10 Bay Area clowns there, clowning for democracy, folks dancing for democracy, two different groups coming. It'll be a very strong community rally, protest, and event in solidarity for those who are resisting this regime or this administration, and coming together to say no more. As John Lewis said, no more kinks.
What is your political theory of how it's useful to rally outside a city hall in an exceptionally democratic city in Northern California?
It makes a difference. I mean, whether you're looking at something as tacit as the butterfly effect, where, yes, local people here feel encouraged when they see others who feel like them, even though they may not be able to participate, when they see others who carry the torch for them, it encourages people. It's very supportive as well to our elected officials. They often don't feel or have their finger on the pulse of their community, and it gives them strength. Just look at what Attorney General Bonta is doing in helping to lead the nation with other attorneys general to sue the administration. Some people thought that would be unconscionable, to be suing our own federal government, but yet here we are. He is a resident of the city of Alameda. For him to see his city turn out, come together, speak up, that does give more than just moral support. It gives them strength to know that they're on the right path, doing the right thing. And also, I must point out, not just the Attorney General, but Governor Newsom. Not that he's putting his neck on the line. He is representing and fully bringing forward through his authority as governor, the support of and for the people, residents, and anyone who passes through California. He's out there and really leading the charge. They see what we're doing when media like you and or radio or even online with influencers or just looking at the post online. This is a signal, and it's a local signal, but it's part of thousands of actions this time around with this Good Trouble days of National Day of Action that send a signal both to Washington, but more so to our own elected officials, to keep them in the game and being focused on our civil rights and protecting our democracy.
Alameda, in addition to being heavily Democratic, is a place that has a kind of long, troubled history of racism. This is something that Rashid Shabazz, who's been a guest on this program before, has documented some length, using things like zoning to try to keep the island pretty white, and using police where the zoning doesn't accomplish everything intended. Do you have local asks or local goals aside from getting people to do more to resist Trump?
Well, two parts. One, to address the first part, I mean, mind the pun, but Alameda, as they say, no man is an island. We are an island and an island city. But this city is no island unto itself in this country, with the ills and structural problems that have existed since, Jim Crow and before. Whether we're talking redlining of our communities, it's not persistent to date, but the lasting effects, the structural harms, the traumas in our communities, particularly in our communities of color. Yes, Alameda is almost every major urban city has suffered these harms. But Alameda really has pulled forward and pulled through. We have work still to be done here with reforms, with budget priorities in terms of equity, with their impacts on particularly our West End, which was traditionally our largest community of color, closest to the base and Naval Air Station, particularly around trees. Tree equity, with climate change being this huge threat to both national security and to our local communities. But Alameda has made great strides. And in particular, I should say, in 2020 with the Black Lives Matter protests, we were severely challenged in the middle of all that, literally 2 days, I believe either before or after George Floyd was killed. We had our own fracas where our police department inadvertently was called in, some person called because they saw a black person, quote, dancing in the street. And unfortunately, it didn't go the right way. The person was arrested, and that made national news, quote, dancing while black or dancing in the street. And it led to, in the middle of all those protests, after George Floyd had been killed, literally at the same time, it led to the passage of a police oversight committee. We have since gone through a couple, but now have settled on a very strong and community-oriented, or minded, I should say, police chief, Chief Yoshi. Since then, he's hired and diversified his force, which looks more like the city of Alameda. There are now more officers of color, and particularly women officers, in units, driving cars, and on the streets. So Alameda's made great strides. Now, and still, we have work to be done here. But then, as we're looking at these rallies here, is there local work to be done? Yes. Again, keeping pressure on our elected officials to protect our sanctuary city status. The first, iteration of, or the first 1.0 of the Trump administration, our city we organized through ACLU, People Power, a lot of groups across the country jumped on to protect our democracy then, our civil rights, and to protect our residents and immigrants. We organized town halls, which led to the passage of our sanctuary city law, and also tighten our city's code to prevent police from abusing their authority and stopping people randomly, whether it was bias based on race or other. But Alameda is again no island unto itself, but it's definitely coming together in this action on July 17th to really have a teach-in, learn about the history of the civil rights struggle and about black people in the civil rights struggle. Your listeners may not know, but I am African-American myself. My parents organized in the 60s in Columbus, Ohio, and in Ohio, where I'm from, as that was part of their own calling, but also part of survival. We have to be engaged in our own democracy to fight for civil liberties and rights that we did not have, and now to protect those that we have won against this current administration.
I'm curious how you're thinking about, at a local level, what it means to be a sanctuary city now. The table stakes for a lot of sanctuary cities was, we're not going to enforce immigration laws. That's a federal job. Our local police are not going to hand immigrants over to federal agents. But the like federal occupation of Los Angeles and some of the skirmishes we've seen outside San Francisco's immigration court seem to have introduced another thing, which is that everywhere ICE agents have come in like stormtroopers, kitted out with body armor and camouflage and carrying assault rifles, and they've been confronted by protesters. It's usually been local police clearing protesters out of the way for ICE, even in these so-called sanctuary jurisdictions. They're becoming part of the police response to anti-ICE protest. Has there been any discussion at your local level what it means beyond non-cooperation on turning over immigrants to actually be a sanctuary for them?
There's what is stated, and you've pointed that out correctly and aptly, I should say. And to put a point on it, there's been a distinction between the political statements, not to call it rhetoric, but political statements of cities and of police departments, and then the actions that are seen on the street. And it's not that they're conflicting. It's just people like us on the streets want our community members protected. We want ourselves to be protected. We do feel threatened by these attacks. For what the administration is doing in Los Angeles, sending 2,000 National Guard members in a show of force, there's 2,000 Guard members. That is more than the sum total of soldiers in both Syria and Iraq at present. This can't stand. I mean, here in the United States, the power lies in the hands of the people. And with this rally and here even locally, we have to demand an end to the extreme crackdown on civil rights by this administration. I mean, from our right to vote to our right to protest and free speech, the attacks on Black and brown Americans, our immigrants, our Latino neighbors, trans people, and other communities. We demand an end to that. We also have to demand an end to slashing of programs that working people rely on. That includes Medicaid, SNAP, and Social Security. Here locally, we do have to be our brother's keeper, our sister's keeper, our neighbor's keeper. It's more than encouraging to see our brothers and sisters across the country. If you look, I saw in Texas, a Black community barbershop, I thought it was, literally the owner comes out and at the door demands a warrant of ICE, denies entry into his place of business. And all the customers came forward to do the same, and they did turn them away. They're doing the same that you can see down in Los Angeles. Garden City, I think it was, I just saw just the other night. The thing is, the people, again, the power lies with the people, but only together, united, can we really defeat this, tyrannical onslaught on our communities.
How much coordination is there between the different Good Trouble Lives On protests tomorrow?
Good coordination between?
How much are organizers of these different local actions talking to each other, coordinating your messaging, your demands, sharing resources?
Right. So it's highly distributed. It's just, I mean, how do you scale a national action? Today with social media, with, you know, just like we're here on a Zoom call, one to many, is the model for the most part. Local organizations, you know, everybody is acting local. It takes a lot of time to organize a rally. The amount of partners, I mean, I'm just the voice that people hear on the radio, but there are teams, not a team, but teams of other organizations just here locally in our city of Alameda who have come together and are committed to fighting for our democracy, who are helping to organize, who are making sure that they are diverse, who are making sure that they are accessible to our other liable community members, who are making sure that elected officials both know these are happening, but also attend so they can be closer to the people, but they can also share how they are protecting us and are working with their city attorneys and with their police departments to protect our civil rights, to protect our neighbors, and also not to share information if and as they have, you know, declared themselves a sanctuary city. It is a network. To say it's a village, it is a village, but it's a one-to-many model. Not that our city or it, with our organizers are actually coordinating with other organizers in local cities here. It's really just taking the messaging from the national and working on it here locally as local networks.
All right. Amos White, we'll leave it there. Thanks very much for speaking to us.
Thank you for your time.
You've been listening to Law and Disorder, a podcast where we expose the cracks in our system, agitate for resistance, and collectively build a new world in which all of us can thrive. That's it for this episode, family. You can find more information about topics and guests in this episode's show notes. Law and Disorder is produced at KPFA. That's listener-supported radio on the Pacifica Network. The show is produced by Jesse Strauss and hosted by me, Kat Brooks. Our theme music was composed by Steve Raskin of Fort Knox 5. If you like what you heard, please follow us on social media at Law and Dis, that's D-I-S, and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. Feel free to holler at us about something you heard or send us a show idea at lawanddisorder@kpfa.org. You can also find our content live at 8 a.m. weekdays on KPFA. That's 94.1 FM in the Bay Area. Our show and all of KPFA's programs are funded exclusively by you, the listener. And if you're in a position to support us, please donate today at kpfa.org. Take care of yourself and take care of each other. We all we got, fam.